Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
Good morning. This is Dave Kubicki.
We're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to talk to you about estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, and you could be the very first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. If you have any questions, you can give us a call. We'd love to talk to you. Good morning, Dave.
Morning, Debbie. What's going on?
Not much. It's a beautiful day. It's just a little colder than I thought it was going to be.
Well, it's going to warm up, and it looks like it's going to stay, April-ish in terms of the weather. I think mid-50s, high-50s later on this week. I'm very excited. I have golf clothes on, even though I'm not going to go golfing. I'm just into it.
So are you guys doing anything for Easter? Easter egg hunts or anything fun like that?
Yeah, definitely. So we our house is on a corner. And for the last 5 years that we've had our house, we have not had a fence that helps with the fact that we're on a corner on a relatively busy street. And we got a playset, and I'm giving way too much detail here, but the point is we just got the fence installed yesterday, which means that now we can let the kids play without running after them. So the Easter egg hunt will be easier to do. It's just grass, so it's going to be eggs all over the place, but it'll be fun.
Sounds awesome. So what exciting cases have you had this week?
I'm so happy you asked, Debbie. Debbie and I, before we go on, we always talk, is there anything you want to talk about, whatever. And I said to Debbie and Jamie yesterday at our Medicaid meeting, there's actually this fact pattern that it happens all too often, and hopefully everyone out there could maybe learn something from it. And it's kind of odd because we're talking about mom who's in her mid-90s, early 90s, and she's got a lot of money. She did well for herself. And her three kids came in, grown kids, and they said, she keeps falling. She's in the hospital right now. She was at assisted living. And it's not looking like she can go back. Home is not an option. So we went through all the pieces, Debbie, that you normally would, right? Which is, what's going on? What are the, what's the prognosis? Are we talking about just a rehab situation where Medicare could help? Are we talking about a longer-term issue? And is home out of the question, right? So we kind of went through all those different beats. And, looks like mom's going to need a nursing home. And then we turned to the financial aspect to it. And mom's got a lot of money, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And, that's the inheritance that mom was going to leave to her three kids. And the kids are not thrilled with the idea that their father, who predeceased mom and mom, worked their whole lives. And it may be that they're going to not get an inheritance because of a nursing home. And it's not that they're not getting the money. It's more that money was wasted, right? There's a difference between the two. They're not being greedy. They just are feel very sad about the idea that their parents worked so hard. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we went through the numbers, and like we say to people all the time, whether it's 5 years or 5 days ahead of time, there's always something we can do. So we can do a crisis plan that I know you talk about in your webinars, and I'm not going to talk about it right now. It's going to get a little into it, but the idea is we could save about 50 cents of every dollar. And because of the amount of money mom's got, it's going to take a year or two before the family will see the savings in doing what we're about to do. They're going to give us a decent chunk of change for us to do this crisis plan, eventually get mom to be in a nursing home where Medicaid is paying for it. And the point of the story, Debbie, is not how we can do things last second, although guess what, guys? We can do things last second, and you should know about that. The point of the story is that if they did something 5 years earlier, 10 years earlier, right? It's not a shock that mom went from 88 years old to 93 years old. That's how age works, right? So they could have done some planning 5 years ago. So we weren't going to have to do a crisis plan. They weren't going to have to give us, you know, a retainer to do all that work. They could have done a trust and saved 100 cents of every dollar instead of 50 cents of every dollar. And it's just such a typical fact pattern that we face. And I think the reason why, you know, you are so adamant in your webinars and passionate on the radio and with our client encounters is because the more everyone out there knows that you can plan ahead of time and still use and enjoy your money, the more people are going to save 100 cents of every dollar. That's our goal, right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely a goal. It's interesting that I have like the reverse scenario where we actually did the planning. It was one of my clients, and we did the trust 4 years ago, not five. And I had no idea what was going on, and all of a sudden, I get a call from one of the kids, and they say, well, mom's been in the nursing home for a year and a half. We've spent down all of her money, and the nursing home is doing the Medicaid application for free, but we've got to back the house out of the trust because it's not protected. What do you think about that one?
Time out. You know, like those, my daughter has Highlights magazines. Do you remember Highlights magazine?
Oh, yeah, I loved them.
Okay, you know the part of it where it's like, circle what's wrong with this picture?
Mm-hmm.
I just circled like 8 times with what you just said because that's outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
So what's so wrong about it?
Well, when she called me, I was like, oh, my gosh. I wish you had called me earlier. I mean, that's what we try to do is educate our clients and their children that if anything changes, give us a call. Even if you think it's something minute, you think you've got it under control, give us a call. I mean, that's why we don't charge for phone calls. We want to be able to help you. And if she had called me a year and a half ago and had said, hey, mom's at a nursing home, she's not coming home, what are we going to do? This is how much money she has. This is the houses in the trust. What are we going to do? We could have done some planning and we could have saved some money. It's not that we can't do some kind of back end planning now, but we could have saved the money. And whenever a nursing home or a hospital or whomever says they're going to do the application for you for free after you spent down all your money, that's not really free.
Well, it certainly didn't end up being free. Yeah, I totally agree. It's like one of those offers where you pay full price on three and you get one half off or something. Well, yeah, I guess you got that last one half off, but you have to pay full price the rest of the way, and you kind of have to factor that in. So what do you think about that house issue? Right. So let's just say that it's a trust, and it hasn't gone through 5 years. It sounds like they just private paid for to get to 5 years. Is that what they did?
No, it's not even 5 years yet.
Okay.
It won't be 5 years till next year. They've been private paying for a year and a half.
So that brings up a really interesting dilemma. And we don't have a whiteboard or chalkboard to write on to explain to people over the radio. But I get this question a lot. I'm curious what your answer is. If someone does a trust, and 2 years later, God forbid, right, there's this big event, and now we need a nursing home. We didn't get through the 5 years, Debbie, right? So people are going to assume, well, it was all for naught, and it all didn't work out. Maybe. It depends on all the facts and circumstances, right? You know, when there's real estate, for example, we could... You know, we don't have to sell the house and lose the money. We may, depending on the timing, instead say, well, we intend to return home Medicaid. And guess what? Mom may return home one day, and that house could be protected. And what Medicaid does is they put a lien on real estate if it's owned by mom and mom needs a nursing home. And when you only get a couple years in, you have so many different options as to the right way to go. Obviously, the goal is 5 years, but when it's a couple years, Debbie, what do you usually tell your clients?
Well, it depends on what kind of assets we have outside of the trust. It depends on what kind of assets we have inside the trust, right? Is it 4 years out? Do we need to pay privately for a year to get all of those assets in the trust protected, exactly what we need to do. But, I mean, there's another twist and turn on this one, too, Dave, because there's a caregiver child that had been living in the house with her before she ever went to the nursing home for years.
So then mom goes into a nursing home. Yeah.
So at that point in time, instead of private paying, right, to try to get that 5 years up on that house, they could have actually taken the house back out of the trust and deeded it to the caregiver child. It would have been an exempt asset.
Exactly. And it kind of pushes the point that these facts matter, and nothing against the wonderful people that are on the front lines helping our elderly community in assisted livings and nursing homes. They're doing a service. You know, remember, it's no one's goal to be in a nursing home, but they exist because people need it, and they're doing, you know, services that need to be done. But they're not elder law attorneys. And if they were, they would be really bad elder law attorneys, because they give the wrong advice, because the facts matter, and they may not know that. They may not know that that home could actually be transferred to this caretaker daughter. And the logic there is, well, daughter's been taking care of mom. If not for her being at home with mom, mom would have needed a nursing home earlier and would have, you know, been on Medicaid earlier, right? So there's an exemption for this caretaker exemption. Do we expect a administrator at a nursing home to know that? No. Maybe they dealt with it in their personal life, and that's why they know it. And then there's this other kind of conflict of interest sort of thing, which is, you know, Debbie, the Medicaid doesn't pay as much as you pay when you need a nursing home, right? You may pay $15,000 for that nursing home. Medicaid may pay less. Well, definitely is going to pay less, not May. And I mean, it might be half of that amount. So, you know, when they're doing that free application, they do happen to be getting, you know, that full $15,000 each and every month until you qualify for the program. Whereas elder law attorneys usually can get people qualified earlier, which means those places are getting a little less money. So, you know, that being said, you know, they're doing wonderful for our clients. It's just we'd like them to keep out of the whole Medicaid planning aspect to it, because there is this inherent conflict of interest.
So as you can see, Dave and I could just talk and talk and talk about about our clients and give you ideas of what to do, but we would love to hear from you. We'd love for you to give us a call. The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. I did want to mention that we're still doing webinars. I know it's getting nicer out and people, you know, may want to be out and about, but we do have live webinars. Next week, we have one on Wednesday, which is April 7th. Can you believe that? Already April 7th, which is going to be Wills versus Trusts at 10 in the morning. And then at 2 in the afternoon is Medicaid and Estate Planning Myths. So those are great opportunities to listen to us talk about different aspects of estate planning, what the difference between wills and trusts is, which is always a really interesting one. And you can go to our website at www.herzoglaw.com, and you can click to register for either one of those. And if you're working, right, or if you're out and about and you don't have a chance to watch them, you can always go on our website, again, www.herzoglaw.com, and you can actually look at the webinars. A lot of them have been pre-recorded, and you can watch them at your leisure. I always joke and say it's like Netflix, right? You click it on, you go get a snack, you sit and you watch it, you fast forward, depending on what you want to watch. But it's a great opportunity. It's interesting because I have a lot of people that are calling me now. I had a gentleman that called me this week that he said, I need to make an appointment for my daughter. I'm like, okay. He goes, I watched your webinar, and you told me I need to do estate planning for my daughter, and so I'm bringing my daughter in. When can I come in? And I went, okay.
It usually doesn't work that way, but
no.
Okay.
Well, all right, guys.
That's wonderful. Go ahead.
Hey, sorry to interrupt, but we do have our first caller on the line right now, Shirley in Troy.
Morning, Shirley.
Good morning. I have a house that's in my children's name, and I have all my bank accounts, IRAs, and insurances and everything all in their name. Would that have to go to probate? I have a will. Would that have to go to probate?
So you've already transferred the house to the kids. So,
yes.
And you reserved a life estate so that you can live there and do whatever you want to, right?
Right.
And then you've got the kids are joint on the accounts or they're beneficiaries on like IRAs and life insurance like that, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if everything's joint or has a beneficiary, then it will pass as a matter of law, right? So it automatically would pass to whomever the joint person or the beneficiary is whenever you pass away. So you shouldn't have to probate it. The only reason we have to probate a will is if somebody has something individually in their name. So usually, and you'll laugh at this one, usually it's totally something random. Like somebody has stock certificates or something like that that they forgot about. A lot of people have stock in like MetLife or something like that because when the life insurance companies demutualized, people got stock and didn't realize that they did. So as long as everything's joint or has a beneficiary, there shouldn't be any probate when you pass away.
All right, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Bye-bye. It's always good to have people give good news.
Well, so I got to ask, and because, I mean, not Shirley, she didn't ask, but other callers have asked in the past, if everything I have is avoiding probate, then why do I need a will? And it's one of my favorite questions that people bring up because they're planning on everything going perfectly, apparently, because, yes, you're right. But assets can go to beneficiaries, transfer on death, pay on death, right? Life insurance, the life estate deed. She created a scenario where the kids own the property now, subject to her life use. Upon her death, her life use ends. The house is still with the kids, et cetera. That's wonderful. Any good estate plan is going to need to have at least a power of attorney, health care proxy, and a will, even if the plan is to avoid probate. And it's because just in case, there's other monies. What other monies? Well, you mentioned some things that people may forget about. Let me give you another thing, Debbie. And I don't know what it is. We've had a run of these for some reason, but we all have estates where there's some sort of lawsuit associated with the person who passed away. So, you know, I know we've had hidden runs before. I know there's been a slew of medical malpractice or potential malpractice cases. We've had asbestos litigation cases. Those lawsuits, they belong to your estate. They're governed by your will. And so if you don't have a will, I'm not sure who's going to get that money if there's an actual lawsuit.
I was just, it just brought to mind the people that I met with today. It's like, okay, so let's say you do your will and you did it 20 years ago and you don't know where it is. I had a Zoom meeting with a daughter this week that had the will was done by an attorney that has passed away years ago. And she scanned me a copy of the will. And I said, well, do you have the will, the original will? And she's like, no. And I said, well, you've got to have the original will so we can probate it because mom has the house in her name individually. And everything is supposed to go to this daughter, right? But there's four kids. And I said, do you have the original will? And she's like, no, the attorney's dead. We don't know where they went. I said, we've got to have the original will to probate it because if they can't find the original will, it's assumed that the person destroyed it. So this will that says that you get the house is not any good unless I can find an original to probate, and that means that that house is going to go to the four kids instead of you. Oh, my gosh. It was awful. The look on her face and her kids' face. And I said, you know, you need to do some research and, you know, find out if somebody bought out this person's firm or check at the surrogate's court to see if the original will was filed there when they went out of business.
Debbie and Dave, we have a couple of callers on the line. First up, Ed in Saratoga.
Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Ed. Good morning. Good morning, Debbie. This is Ed.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Pretty good. Question. I've got the revocable, and now a year has gone by with that, and I think on reflection, I think, I kind of lost about $100,000 against the five-year look-back. I don't know. And now the question is this. If I now go to the irrevocable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is that a big deal? Paperwork-wise and all?
No, we can convert it at it. It's not a big deal, but it's just going to start. So if we got it done this month, you wouldn't be protected for another 5 years from now. But, yeah, you're right. Instead of doing the irrevocable trust, we did the revocable trust. So those assets aren't protected. But we can totally change it and get the 5 years running. It's not a big deal. I'd be happy to help you with it.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll see you.
You're welcome, Ed.
Bye.
Okay. Thanks, Ed. Bye-bye.
All right, next up, we have Jack in Red Hook.
Morning, Jack.
Yes, good morning. We have a trust, and my son and daughter are beneficiaries of it, and, of course, the house is in it. On our demise, when they inherited all this, our house and whatever, do they have to pay capital gain if they sell the house?
Wonderful question, Ed. The answer in almost every instance is going to be no, they will not have to pay capital gains. So you've been using and enjoying that house, haven't you?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So that means that upon your death, that house is part of something called your taxable estate. That's for estate tax purposes. Now, I'm not going to ask you how many millions of dollars you have on the radio. That would be inappropriate. But I'll tell you that the estate tax exemption levels federally are over $11 million per person. And in New York State, it's almost at $6 million a person. So for the most part, many of us aren't going to have a taxable estate. So we have a house. We have other assets in a trust. We're using and enjoying it. And I just told you it's part of this taxable estate. But the fact is there will never be any estate taxes unless we hit the lotto, right? So what does this all mean? Well, when the monies, the house, does go to the kids, they get a step up in the tax basis. The capital gains goes away. The government has one bite at the apple when it comes to your assets at your death. That bite is the estate tax. If an asset of yours is subject to the tax, which in this case it would be, regardless of whether or not there are taxes to be paid, there would not be. The kids will get a full step up. That means that in their hands, if they sold the house, when we figure out did they make money on it, we would take the sales price, say 400 grand, and we would subtract from it what it was worth when you died, which based on the fact they just sold it means it was worth 400 grand.
So it's a wash.
Minus 400, zero. Exactly right. Now, I said in most instances, because we're attorneys and we're trained to not ever give a firm answer on anything, right, Debbie?
Exactly.
And it's because maybe they decide that this isn't the right market for it, or they want to rent out the house, or maybe they're thinking about moving back into town. And you know what happens? A year goes by, and now it's the hottest real estate market ever, and that property went up in value. Well, there might be gain, but the gain will be based off of that date of death valuation of the property. So all that capital gain will be washed away, and then it can start to accrue anew if they keep holding things in the trust.
Okay. Understand. Okay. All right. That's good to know. Of course, I think the rule now, if you live in a, as an individual, if you live in a house for a year or 2 years, you don't, if you sell it and have a gain, you don't pay capital gain tax.
That's right. So the difference there is we're talking about you selling it or your wife selling it during your lives. And it's two out of the last 5 years. For an individual, it's the first $250,000 of gain is exempt from capital gains. If you're a married couple, it's the first $500,000 of gain, not the purchase price.
Right.
The profit. So most people during their lives aren't going to have capital gains for their primary residences. They, of course, would for their vacation homes and summer homes and so on.
Very good. Thank you. The information is good. Thanks.
Oh, thank you.
I always like those questions.
they're the most important questions because one of the, you know, I'm sorry that to the listeners that everything always seems to go back to these trusts that we do. But it's kind of because the trusts are fantastic. And one of the things that I think is is up there on the top 10 list of why the trusts work and why they work for our clients, Debbie, is because we're not giving up the farm. We're still going to get that step up in the tax basis when people pass away. You know, we hear this term irrevocable as a form of trust, but our trust is like just kind of barely irrevocable. We're still, because our clients are still enjoying their money during their lives, it triggers all the benefits that Ed and I were just talking about, and that step up in the tax basis.
Right, and that's a great benefit. And a lot of people think that their kids are going to have to pay tax. And I always tell them it's a snapshot when the person passes away. So unless there's a huge, you know, like it was a low day on the stock market and then all of a sudden it rallies and that's when you decide to sell the stock, or, you know, it's like the Beverly Hillbillies and they discover oil in the backyard, then there might be some taxes you have to pay.
And, you know, even oil these days may not be worth as much as you think anymore. They got to come up with a different plot line for the next reboot of the show. Hey, I got a quick question for you, Debbie. And I know we got a couple minutes before the break here. So, I told this client that I was going to mention this fact pattern, so I might as well do it right now. Mom passed away, okay? We're talking about daughter here, grown daughter. And she has kids of her own, does not own a house, just has some money, okay? Decent chunk of change, right? You know, getting to about $100,000 of assets. And her question to me was, should I do the Medicaid trust? And it gets to be more of a question, or it's, how should I phrase this? It's more of a no-brainer to do it when we have real estate and lots more assets. I mean, you know, the cost is the cost, right? The work isn't any different, Debbie, for you if someone has $200,000 or $100,000 to put into the trust. But for the client, you know, there's a certain bang for their buck. And as our one of our earlier callers, I think Shirley said, you know, you could avoid probate when it's just money. And one of the benefits of our trust is to help avoid probate. So you could kind of, that's a wash. You know, we like to protect real estate, and real estate can be tricky, but this client doesn't have real estate. And I said to her, you know, I could take a quarter out and flip it, and we'll, you know, whatever it says, that's what you can do. But I said it jokingly to her, but it's really because it's kind of a coin flip. Certainly, if she needs skilled nursing one day, she'll be really happy she did the trust, right? But we're also, you know, if you know, that dwindles down and now she's got $50,000, certainly I don't think I would tell someone just for $50,000 to create a trust that costs several thousand. There's not a lot of bang for their buck. So is there like a certain number or a certain theory that you go by to help advise clients when they don't have real estate? It's just money.
Well, that's a great question. And the one thing that I always start with is, tell me a little bit about your family health history, right?
I love it.
So
yes.
When you start looking at health history, how's your mom? How's your aunt? Right? Is there any signs of Alzheimer's in the family? Is there any late stage diseases? You know, and you have to kind of look at that, because a lot of times people look at me and go, oh, well, you know, my mom died young and she had Alzheimer's or this or that. And I'll be like, well, then if you've got a family history of cognitive impairments, you really should think about it, because it may not happen to you. But if it does, wouldn't you want to make sure that your assets are protected? And if it doesn't, because the irrevocable trust, you can always revoke an irrevocable trust, meaning you're kind of putting the money in there, kind of setting it and forgetting it. But if 5 years down the road you decide you want to go on a cruise around the world, you can always do a partial revocation and kind of pop the cork off the piggy bank, shake some money out, put the cork back in. What's still in there is still protected, but you can still live your life.
All right, guys, I hate to interrupt right here, but it is time for our break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and Flatbush Road in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back with the second half of the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I'm Debbie Verney.
I'm Dave Kubikin. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning. So we've got another half hour. We had a lot of really great calls in the first half hour, and we'd love for you to be the first caller in our second half hour at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And before we went to the break, we were talking about why you should do a trust.
Right. And it was the specific issue was, you know, when there's no real estate, do we really need it? And you made such a great point that, you know, if all things are equal, sure, but all things are never equal, and that family history matters so much. Or here, let me give you another version of it. How are your kids doing? Are they not okay, right? Are you worried about one of them? Is one of them in a really messy marriage? Are you concerned about the health of one of your children? Do we have special needs grandchildren, right? Because one of the things that, yes, the trust protects money during your life. That's great. It's so important. Gives you a lot more options. You're not saying, yes, I'm going to need a nursing home one day. You're saying, I have the option of protecting my money and keeping it protected. Because as you mentioned, Debbie, you could always unprotect money. You can do partial revocations if needed, right? It was, you know, based on the law and so on. But the trust also happens to say what happens when you pass away, Debbie, right? It says the house goes here. It says money goes there. And it also says, I call it the knucklehead paragraph, but it says, if someone essentially has a gambling problem, let's not give them a pile of money so they can go run to the casino and you know, bet the over on what on, you know, whatever. If someone has special needs, we could sprinkle in language. So it's not just about protecting during your life. It actually extends to protecting after your life and putting your beneficiaries, whether they're people, whether they're charities, whatever it is, putting them in the best position to succeed and having, you know, that language in there. Now, that language, Debbie, that could be in your will as well, right? But with the will, we'd have to go through probate. So everything kind of connects. And, you know, fortunately for us, it always seems to go back to the trust because it happens to, you know, it's like a Swiss Army knife. It kind of does everything, right? You get to enjoy your assets during your life. We get to protect your assets in your later life. We get to get money to whoever you want and whoever's important to you. And all along the way, Debbie, you could change your mind. You could take money out, right, through a partial revocation. You could say, you know what? I had Debbie as my trustee, and I like what Dave's saying. I'm going to switch it to Dave's my trustee. You can do that, right? You could say, Ben was my beneficiary, but Candace is doing such a great job on the radio. I'm about to switch it. Debbie, I need an amendment to my trust. You could do it all.
David, Debbie, true. We do have a couple of callers on the line with some questions. We're going to start right now with Nancy from Rensselaer.
Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. I moved here about a year ago from another state. And when I was in the other state, I had a will drawn up by an elder lawyer. And I've been listening to your program since I got up here. And I'm wondering, it sounds like, will a will be enough to prevent probate and protect my assets? Or do I need to do something else because I'm in New York?
Well, that's a great question. And what I would suggest is make an appointment to come into the office so we can look at your documents, because a will doesn't really protect assets and it doesn't protect you from probate, right? So kind of earlier when we were talking, everything used to be joint or have a beneficiary to avoid probate. Do you have a house?
Yes.
Yeah, so the house is individually in your name, right?
Yes.
So if you passed away, we would have to probate your will in order to have an executor appointed to be able to sell that house. Whereas when Dave was talking earlier about trusts, if you had your house in a trust, then the trustee just calls the realtor and puts the for sale sign in the yard or transfers it to whoever it goes to. So we'd be happy to look at your documents from another state. I mean, it doesn't mean that they're not any good anymore, but it sounds like you want to make sure that things are protected, and perhaps you should look at doing a trust, or maybe not. But we do offer free consults if you want to come into the office and sit down with Dave or Jay Marie or I or Harry, and we can go over everything and tell you whether it's good, bad, or ugly and what you should probably do to make changes.
Okay, and I had one other question.
Okay.
From the show, like, I've heard this, like, okay, it's not in my heir's name. What if I put everything in my heir's name now? Would there be a disadvantage to the heir if all these assets go in their name?
Well,
that's a great... go ahead, Debbie.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Go ahead.
There's very few instances where we're going to recommend something like that. And it's a couple reasons why. Number one, as Ed and I talked about, we do want there to be tax benefits to our beneficiaries through the, you know, getting rid of capital gains. So if you have stocks, things that went up in value, we really want that asset, those stocks, to pass to your beneficiaries when you die, so the capital gains goes away. Okay. So that's number one. Number two, I want you to have your money for the rest of your life. I want you to be able to access your money for the rest of your life. And when Debbie was talking about, you know, you could put money in and you can revoke an irrevocable trust, it's not like a gimmick that you, under the laws of New York, if we have all interested parties in agreement and you happen to be in charge of who those people are, you can access money. So giving money to your trust is a lot different than giving money to, you know, your kids, because now it's your kids' money. If they have creditors, it's your kids' money. If they, God forbid, pass away, it's your kids' money. If they go through a divorce, potentially that could be part of the marital property in a divorce. More importantly, I just like control. I want you to control your money. So I obviously, as Debbie said, all the facts matter, and you really should come in to talk about it. But I it's got to be a really unique circumstance for me to recommend to any client that they get rid of their money and truly irrevocably give it to someone else. And, you know, I have kids. I'm someone's kid. I understand that if my parents gave me money and said, hey, hold this for me, I would absolutely hold it for them. I'm not going to spend it and so on. I can't guarantee I'm not going to die. I hope I don't die at that point, but it's possible. So I really, really, really want you to hold your own money, and you could just protect it while controlling it. It's not one or the other. You can do both. A trust happens to work. The last thing I just wanted to say is, for all the other listeners out there, if you do a will in another state, that will is still valid. If you have a New York will and you move to New Jersey, your will is still valid. But we're worried about the powers of attorney, the healthcare proxy. We want to make sure that people can act for you now that you're in New York. So we may want to update those documents. And when it comes to wills, last point, a will is a meaningless piece of paper unless it goes through probate. So there is no will that avoids probate. There's no such thing. And in addition to making an appointment, Debbie, I think she'd be a wonderful, wonderful viewer of the Wills versus Trusts webinar, which you can get on demand on our website, because that's about an hour. You could sit, you know, on your couch and in your sweats and kind of listen to some stuff and then come on in.
Well, thank you very much. This is very helpful.
Great. Thank you very much for calling.
All right. Next on the line, we have Sharon in Clifton Park.
Hey, Sharon.
Good morning. I have a quick question, something I did know, but totally out of my mind anymore. If somebody dies without a will, let's just assume clear, just without a will, has a wife and two kids, or three kids, whatever, what is the legal, isn't there like a X amount goes to the kids?
just assuming there's no complications here of, you know, but just pure straightforward, without a will, what's the wife entitled to? What are the kids entitled to?
Well, and that kind of go, you like this, it's the legal answer. It depends. So,
well, I know it depends, but that's what I'm saying, just cleanly, that's it. I mean, there's, you know, so, let's say, you know.
So if husband and wife have everything joint, right? So if the house is joint, if the accounts are joint, and they have each other as beneficiaries, then when the first one dies, it usually just goes to the surviving spouse, right? Because
but without a beneficiary. Yeah.
So if it doesn't have a beneficiary, so let's just say there's no beneficiary and there's a married couple and the person passes away. So the right. surviving spouse gets the first $50,000 and half of everything else.
$50,000 and half. Okay.
Yeah. So for instance, it's interesting that you asked this question. I had a situation where husband and wife, they had two kids. The husband had one of those jobs where he could get sued, so they put the house in the wife's name, right? And then she died, and she didn't have a will. So everybody thinks, well, yeah, it's mom and dad's house, right? It was a first marriage. These were their kids. Right, the kids are going to give the house to dad, right? It's his house. No, the daughter was like, no, I want my money. And they're like, but this is mom and dad's house, right? It's like, these are your parents. How can you do this to your father? He just lost your mother. And she's like, nope, I want my cash. Took him to court. Literally took him to court to get her money out of the house.
So the $50,000 and half of everything else includes real property as well as any monetary. Okay. All right. I think that answers my question. So the first $50,000, half of everything else. So is my assumption that anything over $50,000 plus the other half goes to the kids?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Well, there are certain marital deductions, like the surviving spouse gets like any livestock that they have, the family Bible.
Okay.
I'm not kidding.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh. I'm just thinking that because I know horses are considered property. So, but I think you've answered my question. I couldn't remember what the dying without a will. I'm trying to scare somebody into getting a will.
We should have them watch our webinars. You should have them watch our webinars because.
Thanks for bringing that up. What do I need to have or do to see the webinar?
They're on
a tablet or a computer or phone, any device that's got a screen. You could even say, you know what, I just want to hear it, and you could call in and listen to a webinar, at least a live one. You can go to our website. Basically all the videos are up there. You can click on them, and it takes you to a YouTube page with a whole other slew of the other webinars that we've done. And it's herzoglaw.com, and you just click on the seminar page.
Okay, so if I call in Monday morning to register for the next webinar, I don't need anything special on my computer to be able to access it other than to click on the connection?
Right, they're going to send you a Zoom invite. Yeah.
Like, I don't need Zoom or anything like that, do I?
You don't need app Zoom. You might be able to get on without actually having the app, the application for Zoom. You don't have to, like, download it necessarily and have a username for Zoom. You should be able to just click on the link, and it takes you as a guest on this website, which is the Zoom. Or, like, if it's an on-demand one, certainly it's like going to any website and clicking on a video. You're just going to be watching the video.
Okay, good. Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate the information.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck in scaring them.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
All right, guys. We have a couple more people still on the line.
Awesome.
Diana in Albany.
Good morning, Diana.
Hi, good morning. I was wondering, I inherited some money from my husband, and I wanted to put like $25,000 into an account to my nieces. Will they have to pay taxes on that?
No. So you're gifting them money. So that's very
that's
nice
correct.
Of you.
Well, they're supposed to help take care of me.
Okay. Well, I hope they take care of their part of the bargain later on down the road.
They are very responsible children.
Okay. And now it's on record now because you said it on the radio. It's on record.
Oh, definitely. I trust them 100%.
Good. So the recipient of a gift does not pay taxes.
They don't.
At all. Yeah, that's not a thing. The giver of a gift is possible to pay taxes, but there's no gift tax in New York and federally, unless we're talking about the millions and millions of dollars of cumulative gifting, there's not going to be any taxes owed.
Okay. Will they retaliate if I end up going on Medicaid?
Well, it is a gift, and there is this five-year look-back period we always talk about. So if you needed a nursing home in the next 5 years, they're going to look at this withdrawal, this check you cut, and they're going to say, well, unless you were buying a new roof on your home or something like that, that we're going to penalize you for it. And there'll be a period of ineligibility where you're going to have to private pay for your care. Now,
I think
it seems like a good time to just mention, because I think we've gone the whole program, Debbie, without talking about community Medicaid. That ends right now. Because you have these wonderful nieces, the plan for you, I'm sure, is going to be to stay at home for as long as humanly possible. With the help of your nieces, who also can be caregivers under the Medicaid program, as well as other caregivers through this home care community Medicaid program, the goal is to protect, count to 5 years, but if something happened in between, we know home care is going to be the first route that most of our clients want to go. There, at least for now, there is no look-back period being applied, but eventually it'll be a 2.5-year look-back period if all goes
just
to plan.
2.5. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm 76, and I'm nervous about that.
Well, it's never a bad idea to come in and talk about it and go through all the other assets and all the other facts in your fact pattern.
Yeah, I'm a client already. But this was a new situation, and I wanted to find out.
Come on in. Come in again. Why not?
I shall. Okay, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
It was great talking to you. Take care.
All right, we have one more caller on the line, George in Johnstown.
Morning, George.
George, good morning. Would you guys give a brief, if possible, explanation about how Roth IRAs and Roth 401ks are treated as far as being eligible for Medicaid, and if they can be claimed by the state?
Sure.
Go ahead, Dave.
yeah. So how much time we have here? we may need to talk more offline, but here's a good summary. Okay. So
yes.
IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, these qualified retirement plans, they're not all the same. Most of them are where we put dollars that have never been taxed and we put them into our retirement accounts. Hopefully they grow and grow and grow. And then when we get older and we're in our now 72, right, we're required to start to take distributions from those qualified plans, and you could actually take distributions even earlier if you wanted to, okay? Just get that out there. When you take distributions from things like IRAs and 401ks, except for Roth, okay, and we're going to set that aside for a second, even though that's your question, I got to set it up with the other things. With other distributions from retirement accounts, regular IRAs and 401ks, 403bs, you pay taxes on them, right? You report them. Maybe the amount you get when you take a distribution has already taken out taxes, so you get a net amount. Whatever. The idea is you're getting taxed on them. And that's not a small thing in the eyes of Medicaid, because when they look to see whether you qualify and they look at what you have in your retirement account, your regular IRA, your 401k, they're not going to take that total balance and hold it against you. They don't view it as an asset. Instead, what they do is they say, well, you have to take distributions every year. We're going to want you to take a slightly higher amount each year, but they're going to treat those distributions as income. Okay. So the default for a regular retirement account is that they're going to make you put it in payout status if it's not already in payout status, or they're going to want you to elevate the level of income coming from it, okay? And in my mind, the reason why they give these retirement accounts such special treatment is we want people to save for retirement. Not everyone's going to need a nursing home, okay? And it would be a disincentive for people to save if they're going to, you know, say if you have more than $15,000 in a retirement account, you don't qualify for Medicaid, right? It doesn't compute. Now, Roths are a little different, right? For those out there who don't have a Roth or don't know what it is, you are funding a retirement account with dollars that have already been taxed. So these Roth IRAs will grow and hopefully grow and grow and grow in a tax-free way. When you take distributions from them, there are no taxes. And Medicaid has consequences because it's tax-free money. They could then throw it into a trust if that's what they want to do. 5 years later, that money's protected, or next month that money's protected if they need home care. Okay. They could also put it into a payout status where the income is going to be subject to Medicaid, just like in a regular IRA or 401k. I tend to tell people when they're getting up there in age to focus more on protecting 100% of the Roth than to be focused on the tax-free growth. Sometimes I get angry calls from financial advisors and accountants saying, what are you doing telling our client to liquidate their Roth? It's growing tax-free. And I say, yes, it's growing tax-free, but your client's 85 years old, and if he needs a nursing home tomorrow, I'm going to start losing money, right? He's going to lose money and have to pay it to the nursing home. So at some point, the tax-free growth is outweighed by possibly losing that IRA, right, the Roth, because it's a Roth and not a regular IRA. So that's the short radio version of it. I hope it's helpful, at least as a starter, but I would love to talk to you more about it offline.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I think I got the meat of the whole explanation, and I will probably see you. I already have all my wills and my trust with your firm, but this came up in discussion with my children, and I thought I would ask for the short answer on air, and I think we'll have to go further. But thank you very much.
Sounds good. Anytime.
Yeah, they should know better than to ask you for a short answer, Dave.
Well, listen, Debbie, nothing like a question on Roth IRAs at 8 o'clock in the morning to wake you up. But a couple things. And we've had two callers now who are clients, you know, kicking the tires on these really important questions. And maybe we don't emphasize this enough. You want to come back in and meet with us. We don't charge for that meeting. Maybe we should, but we don't. You have a phone call, you're an existing client, you have a question about what your document said. You forgot something you heard 3 years ago when you came in to sign your documents with Debbie. Call us. We'll do a phone appointment. We'll do a Zoom. Life changes. And in your Debbie, you talked about a snapshot, and you were talking about estate taxes. Guess what? Your estate plan is a snapshot as to what's going on in your life right now. We're forecasting the future. We're planning for good things and bad things. But then life happens, and you need to call Debbie, you need to call Jamarie, Harry, myself, and let us know when things are happening. Otherwise, we're not going to know about it.
Right. I mean, that's the whole thing. If you don't tell us, we can't help you. And the thing is, too, is parents, you need to kind of tell your kids, kind of inform them where your documents are and say to them, and I've gotten this call a lot, the child calls me and says, look, my parents always told me if anything happened to call you. And I'm like, okay, let me go pull the file and let's talk about what needs to be done. So we can't help you if we don't know what's going on.
Yep, absolutely. And that it brings it back to that first fact pattern you talked about, Debbie, where you're told by the client's child, it sounded like, that they've been private paying, that means past, for the last, year and a half. And that's exactly that year and a half phone call. It's not, I mean, our client is the mom, our client is the dad, and our job for the client is to protect their money and advise them on you know, what happens where, what we can do, how we can do it. We got to know about it because for us, for you to do good by that client, Debbie, you need to know a year and a half ago what's going on so you can help continue their plan. Their plan continues with you.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So we've just got a few minutes left, and I wanted to mention, if you want to call our office, if you're not already a client and you'd like to call our office and have us look at your documents, the phone number at the office is 518-465-7581. Stacy is the person that schedules the appointments with the attorney. She's at extension 126. So it's 518-465-7581. Oh my gosh, I almost forgot the phone number of the firm. And Stacy is at 126, and she can put time on any of our calendars. We can do the appointment via conference call. We can do it via Zoom. We can do it in person. We'd love to meet with you guys and go over your documents if you already have them, or help you set up a plan.
And Debbie, you know, we're starting to do home appointments. I've done a handful of them. You know, many of us are vaccinated and now feel comfortable being in front of those clients of ours who are, you know, compromised and you know, they're concerned too. And it's hard for them to get, you know, go into an office building and there's all these other people. Mm-hmm. If you need us to come to you, we're happy to do it. Absolutely.
Definitely.
Especially if
Most
you have
definitely.
Good coffee, we'll be there.
Oh, really? So it's all about coffee now, huh?
Well, it's not all about coffee, but I can't say it's nothing.
So we would love to hear from you guys. Yes.
Yeah, and I also don't know if we mentioned, so we're down in Kingston. We're in Clifton Park. We're, of course, Saratoga Springs. We're happy to see our North Country clients. We'll go up. I was just in Lake George for a document signing earlier this week. I don't need any reasons to go to Lake George, so... We'd be happy to see you.
You guys have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next Saturday.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.